get real with you. You know, real guys talk real sports. We will. Race, market, game changer. Start to get real. These are the kind of guys I need to have in the locker room. The championship type guys. Certain guys, you just got to recognize, I got to pay the money. I got to keep it. Everybody has an opinion.
They came with so much bravado and so much swagger.
We're not going to make it. Sometimes you got to create space where there's no space.
I can't argue with LeBron to do.
I do have a bit of a problem with execution. Right?
He burned a lot of bridges. He's going to be hated in Chicago. He's going to be hated in Cleveland. He's going to be hated in New York. And that's what I'm excited to see.
I blame it on Nintendo. I blame it on the fact that they never played against a team that's going to be as dominant as this team could be.
The true villain team. The team that everybody wants to smack in the mouth every time they play them.
All right. Welcome to the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. It's your man Marcus, the Game Changer. In here with my man D. Wills. How you doing, D? Talk to the people.
Man, that's it. We loving the streak. I'm down for the women tonight.
Yeah, my man's referring to the UConn women going for the 89th. Win, setting the new record.
Where's Queen Latifah with Lady Fire?
MC Light, that's what they should have had, man. They should have had some luminaries at the game, man. But I don't know if Oriyama would go back with hip hop like that. I don't know if he into the culture like that. But that would have been nice. That would have been a nice touch on everything. But I don't know if that's in Oriyama's toolbox. That's something that we're going to get into in a little bit. We're going to dig into that. You know, speak on the streak of the UConn women, which is phenomenal. So we'll talk about that. We got a few other things lined up. We got a jam-packed show. We're going to try to fit everything in as we always do. Some stuff we get to, some stuff we don't. But y'all always know y'all going to get the main points. We're going to cover the main things. We're going to keep it moving in. And we got a nice show for y'all planned. Again, this is Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. Renegade Radio, keeping it way real. Feel free to call in, pull up a chair to the table. You know, if you got an opinion about something that we're rapping about, we welcome all opinions, we welcome all viewpoints. Just don't come weak. You know, have some legitimate arguments, have something to say, have something you bring it to the table, you might get cut. You know, that's just how it goes down. You know, it's a raw poker game that we play. Some call it sports talk radio. But you know, we play it in a very vicious fashion. So that the number to call in is 1.
I want to say this: we will tumble you. We will wave the fingers.
We say you will get my tumble. Don't bring that in here. Don't you bring that in here?
We will wave the fingers.
We'll give it to you. We'll give you the Mutombo finger. But if you're going to get that Mutombo finger, you got to call in first. And to do that, you need to dial 1-347-989-0844. That's the toll-free number, 1-347-989-0844. Feel free to call in and get on with the Real Sports Guys. Now, you know, we always like to kick off a show with the funky editorial. For this week's funky editorial, we're going to talk about this whole streak. I mean, this is amazing. 89, doing something in sports, 89 times in a row is hard to do, period. I don't care what you're doing. I don't care if it was missing 89 consecutive free throws. It's hard to miss 89 consecutive free-ass shots. So, you know, whatever it is you're doing, if you do it that many times, it needs to be talked about. So we're going to get into that real quick.
Fellas, one thing we need to say. Yes, shall we say it, y'all? Yes, Melvin, right. Jimmy, yes. Coleman, Ryan, say it.
Yes.
Everybody want to get funky one more time.
Yeah.
All right. So, one question I wanted to pose to you, and hopefully Ray gets a chance to join us. Ray is our third team member. You know, he completes our three-man booth that we like to run with. Today we're going with the two-man booth, old Monday Night Football style. You know, one question I wanted to pose to you guys, I knew they were going to win this game. I don't think there was ever a doubt that they were going to win this game. This is a tremendous streak. I'm sure you feel it's a tremendous streak. But, you know, I don't feel like it's as big as it should be. You know, the question I have to ask, and I think the question everybody asks, is would this be a bigger deal if it was some dudes doing it? If this was, you know, Coach K and Duke winning 89 consecutive, or Kyler Perry at Kentucky winning 89 consecutive, or Ben Howland at UCLA winning another 89 consecutive. You know, if it was, you know, one of those power programs in Division I men's hoops, how would this be viewed differently, especially given the way that they've done it? I mean, the average margin of victory over this streak is 33 friggin' points a game. I mean, they're not squeaking out games, man. They're beating the brakes off of people. So I just want to get your opinion on in regards to that particular question.
You know, my thing is to be this consistent this long, and I hear every excuse, you know, the competition. If you really think about back in the 70s, I mean, powerhouses went, I mean, when, and I mean, if you think about the streak that Wooden put together, there were monopolies back then. You know, the same type of monopolies which people talked about is happening here, that the talent isn't spread out. There were monopolies back then in that time where there were a cluster of teams that got the top players all the time. And UCLA was one of those. And it was during a time where you could stockpile your kids with your freshman team. You know, there were some who said that, you know, especially the team that when it was, you know, Kareem or Lou Alcindor at the time, you know, when his team, actually when his freshman team, they felt was better than the team that was the national championship team. And so you start to look at things like that over time and talk about the greatness of the teams that they had at UCLA, but there were systems that allowed for teams to stockpile talent. And so they talk about, you know, Connecticut and Tennessee and some of these programs, you know, there's not as much, you know, diversity or talent across, which, you know, I would say, isn't this true? It takes away from what Orion has done as a coach. It takes away the commitment of those players day in and day out. Anybody who's played sports knows how hard it is to be consistent on a day-to-day basis, particularly when you're talking about students who can get distracted on any given day. To be this focused for this long is incredible. And the other thing that they discount is that he's done it twice. So he did it 89 this time, but back in 2001 to 2003, he did it for 70 straight games. Now, think about that. He doing it for 89 on this run, but he fell 19 short before. So this is the second time he's done this. And there's a lot of haterism on him, but I tell you, it's an incredible streak. I have a lot of respect for what these women are doing. It was good to hear, you know, people like Rebecca Lobo just kind of break things down. You know, Marcus, both of you and I have daughters, and obviously, you know, you have a daughter that's playing basketball, and you coach, and to really, you know, kind of break this down and not give it the kind of just do it that it needs. Like you said, you know, if this were Duke running on this, my goodness, it'd be like, you couldn't talk about the media.
And Dick Vitale would have a baby.
Oh, my.
He would have a baby on a camera indoor floor, man.
My goodness. He'd be down there. I would say something else would happen to him, but I ain't going to say it tonight. But he would be all on the floor.
I'm telling you, man.
Oh, my goodness. goodness. They be going crazy on this. And the person I respect through all of this is Bob Knight. Because Bob Knight put it in perspective. And also talk about the quality of Orion as a coach. He's like, you know, if there's any opening, men or women, they should be coming after this guy. You know, and, you know, and you're right. I mean, it would be at a totally different level. And there's some truth to what he said. And sometimes it's uncomfortable, but there's some truth to what he said in his conference. And, sitting here, Jamal Wilkes is saying, you know, I like it, but then the little jab was like, you know, it's not the same. What do you mean, Jamal? Come on, man. Come on, man. It's not the same. It was more competitive back then. Really? Really? Come on, man.
Come on, man.
You got me feeling Chris Carter-ish over here.
Right.
Come on, man. You know, it's any time you can put that many games together, you know, consistency is tough. If it were right, I would have lost all the weight I needed to lose.
Right.
I got a lot of weight to lose.
Right.
It's hard to be consistent every day and get up and do it every day. It's hard. And when you do it 89 times and with different players, different personalities, that's tough. That's all I can say.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a testament to the coaching skill of Oriema, and I think it's also a testament to the system he's put in place so that you can have, you know, because he's done this over, you know, 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, this hasn't been something that you just do for a couple of weeks and then, you know, it's done. It's not like a 5-6 game winning streak. This has been sustained over several classes of players. You know what I mean? So I think it's an absolute testament to everything that program has done, and I agree with everything you said about it being about consistency and just getting 19 to 22-year-olds on the same page all the time to get them to lock in and focus all the time. I think from an individual standpoint, from looking at it from UConn standpoint, it's truly phenomenal what they've done. Now, the perspective I have, as you pointed out, I have a daughter who plays, I coach. The reason I feel like people don't acknowledge and see the commitment and the focus that it takes is because of some of the things you pointed out. I think there is this idea that, well, they only beat up on everybody because the talent is spread so far, you know, and I think that is a reality within women's basketball that, you know, there isn't the depth that – it's like the Boise State argument. Boise State can go undefeated in the WAC because they're not tested night in and night out by tough teams all the time. Yeah, they got to stay focused. Yeah, they still got to do what they got to do. And so if they go undefeated, that's a testament to their ability to go out there and take care of business. But at the end of the day, they're not in the SEC. You know what I mean? And I think that's the same thing you get with UConn. When they beat the number 10 team in the country by 20-some points, you know what I mean? They beat top five teams by 20, 30 points, and they got a margin of victory of 30-plus points over, you know, a 3 or 4 year period. You start to, you know, people will look at that, and I think that's what people pull at when they start to try and diminish this accomplishment, is they look at that, and then they want to discount what these young ladies and this coach and these coaches and this program has put together over, you know, the last 3.5-4 years, because the talent is spread so thin. And even at the youth levels, I see it where, you know, girls' basketball and women's basketball isn't where the men's game. My daughter's in eighth grade, and, you know, in coaching, I try and tell the girls that anything an eighth-grade boy should do skill-wise, anything he could do ball-handling-wise, anything he could do from a shooting standpoint, you should be able to do. Because those aren't things that have anything to do with physical ability. Those aren't muscle-based things. You don't have to be powerful, quicker, or be able to jump and slap the backboard to do those things. You know, those are basketball skills. And I think sometimes, even though the women's game can be more skilled, I think across the board, there's a huge gap between the haves and have-nots in college basketball because culturally, we don't push our girls. You know, I deal with a lot of girls who just, they outside of basketball practice, they don't pick up a basketball. You know what I mean? And you played sports as a kid. You played ball. I played ball. Any chance I could get, I had a basketball in my hands, you know? And, one, there aren't a lot of opportunities for young ladies to do that. You know, I would get on my bike, and I would ride across town to one court if when nobody was playing there. I'd ride back to my side of town to another court to see if somebody was playing over there. You know, I wouldn't trust my daughter to do that. I wouldn't allow. Not that I wouldn't trust my daughter to do that. I wouldn't think it was safe for my daughter to do that, you know, to be gone for 3 or 4 hours on her bike, given the world we live in. You know what I mean? So I think, you know, there's a lot that plays into this. You know, that's why I wanted to bring it up in this topic because, you know, for me this is very personal because I'm living it. You know, I have a young lady who's an athlete who plays basketball and who plays pretty well. But at the same time, like, I don't think she would ever be able to go to a UConn because I've seen girls who are way more talented than her who probably won't be able to go. And I think that's the biggest difference is that there's in the men's game, the talent level, the drop-off between the haves and the have-nots is not as tremendous as it is in the women's game. And I think that's what people latch on to when they see the streak is that, well, you know, that's why Jamal Wilkes, as unfair as those comments are, that's why he'll make those comments is because he sees it as, you know, outside of the – and, I mean, for UConn, there really is no competition for them, you know. I mean, Baylor gave them a good game earlier this year where they beat Baylor by 1 point, but that's because Baylor has a physical anomaly. I mean, they have a 6'8 woman who is as athletic as a 5'11 woman, you know. And they still beat that team. So, I mean, again, it's hats off to these young ladies because to get people, human beings, at from, you know, 18 to 22 years old to focus on anything and to focus on a common goal and to come together for a common goal and to put aside personal agendas and all those things is a tremendous, tremendous feat. To have them do it for a season is a tremendous feat, but to have them do it for 89 consecutive games is unbelievable. But I think the biggest thing the biggest knock that people will put on this team is that they don't have that the depth of competition, the same way they look at a Boise State or, you know, or teams like that where it's like, well, you beat up on a bunch of nobodies, you know. And there were nights where you could not be as focused or not as locked in and still come away with a win, you know? And that's what people will say, you know?
And if you look at it, they beat more top teams than UCLA beat. And this is where I talk about how we evaluate greatness. And this is what I love about Rebecca talking about. This is something that just genderizes, or this is a gender-related conversation. Because when we talk about greatness in terms of men, we don't do all that all the time. So we could talk about Babe Ruth and his greatness, even though he didn't play against black athletes and he didn't play against Latinos. But we can still feel like we quantify his greatness. And we didn't say he played against a watered-down competition. People make that argument, and folks will argue against it forever. But we'll still talk about his greatness. And that is the part, so that it's interesting when we talk about men, we're able to have examples like that where we can still rationalize greatness. And that's the part that, as I listen to this conversation, I just go, wow, this is ridiculous. You know, because we have too many examples when it's amongst men where we've had great feats that have the same legitimate arguments if we want to make those arguments, and we don't.
Yeah, I you know what? I totally agree. I totally, because I feel the same way about Lance Armstrong.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, so he won 6-2 at the Francis or whatever, and I do believe he was on roids because, sorry, you just don't come back from cancer like that. You know what I mean? Like, you know, usually people use steroids when they're coming back from a significant illness or injury.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know too many more illnesses more significant than cancer. So, you know, I do think related up, but that's another story. But anyway, who was he beating? You know what I mean? Like there was at the time there was an argument for Lance Armstrong as the greatest athlete at that particular time period, you know, around, you know, 03, 04, 05, in that range or whatever, when he was winning, there were people who actually wanted to put him on that pedestal as the best athlete. And, again, who did he beat? Who did he beat? You know, and that was my argument. And there were people who argue against that. Like, well, it doesn't matter. You know, but I think sometimes we, you know, we give guys that pass, whereas with the women's sport, we don't. And, you know, I think this is good for the women's game of basketball for women. I think it's good for basketball for women's basketball. And I think, you know, it's a growing sport still. It's still a growing sport. You know, it's not where, you know, for example, women's soccer is on a global scale. But I think at some point it will be. And, you know, hopefully it gets there soon enough. But, you know, it has a ways to go. But I think this is a good thing for the sport. I think it puts the sport out there. It gets people talking about it. It gets people thinking about, you know, the accomplishments and the amazing things that these young ladies do. You know, yeah, they're not jumping, you know, 11, 12 feet in the air. But there's a very intense commitment to the game of basketball and the fundamentals of the game. And, you know, I appreciate the opportunity that these young ladies give me to sit down with my daughter and watch them play and have her be able to watch and look at these young ladies play this game at a high level and see fundamental technique and see good technique and see them, you know, do their thing and enjoy it and play the game at a high level. You know, they play the game at a high level. So, you know, I enjoy that opportunity. And, you know, my hat's off to Oriema and the UConn women's program. And I would love to see him get a men's job. Not that he needs a men's job to validate, you know, his coaching ability, but I would like to see what he could do on the big stage where he would face a tougher level of competition night in and night out.
Yeah, Will, it's going to be this is a debate that's going to continue for a long time. But right now, ladies, you're the king of the world.
The queen of the world. But, yeah, you know, they're going to hold it down. They're going to hold it down. And again, it'll be interesting to see how this gets played out in the national media and how it's talked about for the next couple of weeks. And, you know, do they ever get a loss? I don't see them losing this year. You know, I think they push this thing up to about 100 wins. Which would be
their biggest competition is Baylor, because Baylor had a lead on them.
Yeah, Baylor and Stanford. They play Stanford. And that's the other thing that I appreciate about the women's game that I think people don't give enough credit to is that in the women's game, because the talent is, there is such a drop-off in talent, the top teams play each other all the time.
All the time.
Almost on a yearly basis. And sometimes people don't give them that credit because that don't happen in the men's game. Football, basketball, otherwise. In the college game, you're really going to see, you know, a team play just about, I mean, half of the top 25, you know, in their schedule. You know, which a UConn will do, they'll have 7 or 8 games against the top 25 teams in the country outside of their conference. You know, almost every non-conference game that they schedule is another top team. You know, and they're doing that to grow the game and to get the game more out there, to have these matchups so that people can see the game being played at a high level so people can get into it. But they don't do that on the men's side, you know, and that's something that I think people forget. And, you know, I think those who may want to take away from this accomplishment need to look at that.
Yeah, I mean, tonight, number 20, FSU, you know, crushing.
Yeah, I mean, and destroyed them. It destroyed it and dismantled them. I mean, it's, like I said, it's pretty damn phenomenal what they did. To do anything 89 times in a row, let alone win a basketball game, win any kind of sporting event, 89 consecutive times is hard to do, especially at, you know, of a high level like, you know, D1 college athletics. Like I said, it's pretty damn hard to do. So hats off to them. Hats off to Oriema. You know, it's a good thing for the game all the way around. So what I want to do now is transition into just a small story that I picked up on as I was doing research for this week. And I saw in the world of boxing, we're going to talk a little bit of boxing for a minute. Again, if anybody wants to get on, feel free to call in. That's 1-347-989-0844. Any boxing fans that want to call and share their opinion and share their take on Pacquiao versus Mosley, which is scheduled for May 7th now. So they got a date booked for Pac-Man's next fight, and it ain't Floyd. And all the reports say Floyd been ducking Pac-Man. You know, Floyd's got his own problems right now as far as, you know, his marital issues and his familial issues. But, I mean, he might have missed his opportunity to fight Pac-Man. And or have that fight that everybody wanted to see. They may be able to fight each other down the line, but I think the fight that people want to see and they wanted to see now was with these two in their primes going at it. And it doesn't look like that fight is going to happen anytime soon. Has this whole process, in your opinion, hurt Floyd's legacy at all?
I mean, you know, I'm a Michigan guy. Floyd's from Michigan. And it disappoints me because, you know, we try to bring the dog. And he just, I mean, I never understood Floyd's rationale. He could pretty much fight this fight and then ride off into the sunset. And, you know, I think Pacquiao even got to a point where he said he would, you know, take a test, but he just wanted to get it done. And Floyd's still ducking it. And he's just been doing some things lately. I think it's diminished it because people want to see the best fight. And folks get a little tired of all this ducking and, you know, all the, you know, posturing and all the other stuff. They want to see the fight. I mean, and I think what's hurting it even more is that you see things like MMA where the top fighters can't get in the ring. They get in, they fight, and in these long plays. You know, if the marquee fighters are going to fight. And then they see over in boxing, you know, all this drawn out. And then when they finally fight, they're not at the point where they could have, you know, they're not at the point where they could just really maximize their talent. You know, it's a year and a half, 2 years too late, and you miss the window to even make it a great state. And so I think because of that, you know, I think a lot of, you know, like I do, I have a lot of respect for Mayweather as a fighter. But it's this kind of stuff that just keeps chipping away at his legacy. Particularly when Pacquiao's fighting all comers. And I think that's what makes it bad. So now, you know, Pacquiao's got to come here and fight Shane. But, you know, Shane is a great champ. But Shane is not, to me, this is not the fight that Manny should be fighting right now. And so it's just, I like Shane. And you know, Shane's the kind of cat you don't want to bet against. But, you know, this is the fight that Manny should be fighting.
Yeah. Now, what I want to do real quick is welcome Ray onto the line. Ray, you there?
I'm here. Yeah, I'm here.
All right. All right. How you doing, brother?
Good.
All right. So what we were talking about, just to get you kind of caught up to speed, before you got on, we touched on the UConn women and they're breaking the record and winning their 89th straight game. And,
Phenomenal.
Yeah. And I don't know. I'll give you a moment to kind of say what you need to say on that. And then what we were talking about when you got on, was Pac-Man and Sugar Shane fighting on May 7th and whether or not that hurts Floyd's legacy. So I'm going to let you touch on the UConn thing, and then you can flow right into your take on the Floyd situation.
Well, the UConn thing is just phenomenal. You know, that record has been up in the air, you know, has been out there for anybody to break for years, and nobody's even come close. To win 89 basketball games in a row is, you know, you're a basketball player, Marcus, you know, night in and night out, how hard it is to be, you know, the target, and every team wants to beat you and play you. And so that's a phenomenal record. And I was listening in earlier and trying to keep up, and, you know, like you said, this isn't stopping at 89. Who knows you know, the pressure, you know, doesn't get any easier for them. But this isn't going to stop at 89. And it could go to 100. It can go to 120 ball games. You know, recruiting that they're doing and whatnot until they find, you know, five young ladies that want to play against these guys and against this team, you know, they'll be able to load themselves up for a while. So they're not going anywhere. As far as the Pacquiao-Mosley fight, you know, and I agree with what you guys were saying earlier, it isn't really the fight you want to see, you know. Mosley's about 39 years old, you know, everybody's been waiting for that Mayweather fight, but Mayweather's personal problems are going to keep him out of the ring, you know, and I'm glad to see that he's not fighting, you know. Aram tried to, you know, make the fight and tried to go to Mayweather, but they didn't get an answer either way. So Mayweather really doesn't want to fight right now. He's got some things he's got to take care of. As far as his legacy, you know, I agree with Devon. You know, Pacquiao's fighting any and all comers. And, you know, Mayweather, he puts a little spin on everything. You know, you got to come in with this blood test or this, you know, you got to fight. We're going to fight, but you're going to fight my fight. You know, Pacquiao's just like, you know, I'll meet y'all back. Let's go.
Yeah, Pacquiao got that women's hooper attitude. He got that UConn attitude. We'll fight. We'll take you on wherever. You know what I mean? You show up in the alley, we'll take you on there. You know?
He just wants to be, you know. And Pacquiao's not hurting his legacy any by not taking the test. Pacquiao hasn't failed any drug tests, so you know, for whatever he's fighting any and all comers, and he's not letting Mayweather dictate, you know, what his legacy is going to be. You know, Mayweather, he's not you know, forget about Mayweather and his attitude about, you know, he must be doped up and all these other things. That's old news, you know. Old news.
Yeah.
Now they need to get this fight done, and they need to get it done, you know, relatively soon. Before they, you know, Hagler and Leonard was an interesting fight, but I wish I would have seen it 10 years before that. You know, it was.
Exactly. That's how I feel.
They were both past their prime.
I kind of wish that. Pacquiao would fight, you know, some of the cats like Berto or some of these young and upcoming fighters, you know. And they don't quite have the name that Mosley had, but, you know, it could be an interesting fight because these guys are moving into the prime of their careers, and it might be a really good, you know, interesting kind of setup for the fight. So I'm hoping that, you know, after he fights Mosley, he gets some of these young and up-and-coming cats that could really push him a little bit.
Yeah, like I said, it'll be interesting to get an idea. I mean, I think Mayweather missed an opportunity. He missed an opportunity. I think Pac-Man is good where he's at, but I think Mayweather may have missed an opportunity. And you're right, Ray. He got family stuff going on. And he probably should be taking care of that right now. So
we'll have to see how that
shakes out.
You know, when he fought the Golden Boy, you know, he made so much money. That fighting really doesn't have to – it's not like he's trying to make a living, you know. So if he was just trying to take care of his legacy, this fight would have happened a long time ago. So, you know, now he's gotten to a point where he's getting caught up in these other things, and who knows when he'll be – you know, when his head will be back into the fighting game. Because I wouldn't go into the ring with Pacquiao with anything but Pacquiao in my mind. You know,
nothing on your mind.
I don't want to think about cell phones or, you know, lawsuits or, you know, felony convictions. I don't want to think about any of that. I want to think about Pacquiao, and until he's at a point where he can concentrate fully, because getting whooped will mess his legacy up. You know, right now he got a little wiggle room, but you get knocked out.
They say ain't nothing wrong with your legacy getting your ass beat.
Right.
That'll ruin your legacy real quick.
Exactly. Right now he can, you know, say, yeah, I could whoop him, you know. He can say that now, but when they count you out, you know, your legacy is going out the window.
By the way Marquez's eyes look, man, his eyes looked like it was another species.
Man, it looked like he got jumped. It straight up looked like he got jumped, man. It looked like he got beat up by the police, where it's like you couldn't even fight back.
Like that Bugs Bunny cartoon, the big guy come in and like lights go off, boo, 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 boo. Lights come back on, his eyes all off.
It's all just gross looking. Didn't even look human. It's like a frog eye or something. Oh, man. But I want to move on real quick to hit on this next topic we got. And we're going to talk a little baseball for a quick second. We're not going to stay too long on the baseball, but we're going to hit on it for a second because there was a big move in this neck of the woods that went down this week, and that was Zach Greinke going from the Royals to the Brewers. Damn. I mean, that's a get for the Brewers. I mean, you put him with Gallardo and with Markham now, and they're going to keep fielding for another year and just ride it out.
But that's what it is. They're keeping fielding for another year. It's one of those things. If they're in contention, they'll make some more moves. They'll make another move or two. It was a perfect time to do that. And it shows that, they are committed to winning. But don't think that, come any time after the All-Star break, if they're not really in it, they can move anybody at that point, fielder or whatever. I think they're taking their shot. And if they're successful and make the playoffs and make a run, maybe they can keep Fielder. I think that's the best thing that Fielder could see is that commitment to winning, to make him interested in staying. If they were to just play him for a year and fill the seats with what he's doing, and not really make a commitment to winning, then Fielder's gone. We'll let them win or get real close to winning, and he'll sit down and negotiate.
First of all,
go ahead, D.
I was surprised that Milwaukee did it. I was like, this is so unlikely. But
that was my reaction.
Yeah, that was my reaction. I was like, what? Yeah, like, did I hear the right thing? But then I'm like, what? How did the Yankees let him go there, given what just happened to him? So I was just like, okay, Yankees missed a double. And I don't know if that's part of some of the things I was hearing, that he had some kind of social anxiety, some other things that are, so maybe he doesn't want to go to a market like New York. He has some kind of disorder or something like that, so I think he's very comfortable going to a market like Milwaukee, or maybe he's the kind of guy that will never end up in, Boston or New York or something like that because of his. But I just couldn't believe New York, wasn't in the bidding for him or wasn't able to get him. It's just like, they just slapped all over the place for him to end up in Milwaukee when they know they need pitching.
I was supremely surprised just because the Brewers don't usually make moves like this. I mean, they usually don't go out. They usually just kind of – they make moves, but they're never moves where it's like, oh, I get that.
They're not there anymore. This ain't Bud Seeley's team anymore. They aren't reaching in their pockets and, pulling up bunny ears, They're pulling out some money. I mean, they went after Sabathia when they had a chance to win. And this is a different attitude. This new owner, or not so new anymore, but, I mean, they've been making better moves and more winning moves geared towards winning than they have ever had under Bud. Bud was just a caretaker. He just, he owned the team, but he really, really wasn't in it to win it. He was just happy to have a team. And now they're trying to win a little bit.
Yeah.
And they're doing it like I think a market like that should do it. Get you good pitching and defense, find you a couple bats that you can pay to get you some runs. But if you can pitch and play defense, then load that up. You can be in every game. And so if you're going to spend money, get you a marquee pitcher, and try and see if you can hold on to a guy like Fielder. Your lineup,
They're doing it like only a team from this, only this smart market team can do, and that's, bring some guys up through the system, and then go out after what you can. When you look at the Yankees and the Bostons, they're not bringing these guys. Very few guys are on the team that have been there any length of time, that didn't come from somewhere else. You know, you got Jeter, and I couldn't even name you somebody from Boston that is, you know, came up through the farm system. They just buy their team every year. You know, they figure out where their holes are and mix and match and put it together. But, you know, the Brewers, if you look at their team, they've got a lot of guys on that team that came up through the farm system. And then they go out and they get what they need. That's the only way that they can compete. They have to have a Prince Fielder under a contract that really underpays him. Because if they had to pay, they would be broke. But they have to take an opportunity.
That's why I'm making this, you know, this deal off in the off season. This is the kind of deal I think, like Sabathia, you think they make is, you know, if they're in contention by All Star break, they make this move. That's the kind of team
right.
Milwaukee, you know, to make a move like this in the off season is much more aggressive than I feel like I've ever seen.
And I think part of it is to be in a position after the All Star break to already be in contention, not to get there. You know, to already be there and to be able to make another move or two.
Yeah, and I also think, you know, if they get to the All-Star break and they're still in contention and, you know, Fields is having a decent year, maybe that's when they move him because now they don't look desperate. Now they can actually move him and get some value back because they're in contention. And so if they do decide that they do want to move him and actually get some pieces back because they did give up a lot of prospects to get Greinke, if they want to get something back at that time, they possibly could. You know, because
I think
the worst-case scenario for them was for them to be not in it, to have kept Fielder, to be not in it at all, as you said, to just be kind of filling the seats and going through the motions, losing, not in it, and then they get to the trade deadline and they're trying to figure out what to do with them. If they keep them, if they let them go, they're not going to get equal value back because they're looking desperate. You know, whereas if you could say, well, we're doing fine. If you want them, you know, then you got to up the ante.
Well, I think, you know, if they're in contention, you know, Fielder's not going anywhere. They're gonna add another piece, and I think that's the idea is not to have to come out of the bag so far. If they're in a decent spot, if they're in, you know, if they're in the lead, if they're in the lead, they're going to go after some other players, and they're going to try to really make a run with what they have. If they're not in true contention, they're going to shift Fielder. They're going to send him somewhere to get whatever they can for him. And I just don't see them. I don't see him wanting to stay, and I don't see them trying to pony up the kind of money that will keep him. But let them have some success. Let them win a division title. And then all of a sudden, Fielder's looking at the whole all of Milwaukee a lot differently. And, you know, so, I mean, I think they truly want to be a playoff contender. And they want to start the season and not have to try to play catch-up. And realizing that they have some young pitchers and they have some decent talent, they could do that.
And I also think that a lot of teams and a lot of management guys in the Major League Baseball starting to figure out how to win in this post-steroid era MLB, and that's with pitching. Because I mean, if you can, again, like if you're a small market team, like you guys said, get some pitching, play some defense, and you got a shot. Because you don't have 750 home run hitters no more. You don't need a major slugger to compete anymore. If you got guys who can get guys out, you got a real shot. Look at the Padres. Look at the Giants last year. If you got guys who can get guys out, you got a shot, especially in the National League. If you got pitching in the National League, and pitchers want to go to the National League.
But that's what's different about this team right now. With Braun and Fielder, they got home run hitters. They got some teams that can score. They got a place for some of these pitchers after the All-Star break to really take a good look at. You know, I think they were lucky to get Sabathia because Sabathia could have gone to, you know, some other squad. You know, he could have vetoed the trade to go to Milwaukee, but he saw in Milwaukee an opportunity to actually do something. They were a decent team and contenders at that point. So if they can come in even better, you know, than they were at the time that they got Sabathia, if their record is much, you know, improved over that, then I think they pick up another pitcher and they go right after it. And it also you also have to think about what Milwaukee is going to try to do if they should lose Fielder, because you don't want to be that place that, you know, only picks up a player here and there every few years. And so if they're going to have to replace Fielder, if he should choose not to go back to Milwaukee, they don't want to be that team. They don't want to be the Pirates where, you know you might get a contract, but, you know, they aren't really going to try to contend. You aren't going to get the kind of players you really want if you don't act like you're going to try to contend. Milwaukee's, you know, they're putting it out there right now.
Yeah.
They're saying.
So I think this is a big get for them, like I said before. It's a big get for them. And, you know, it puts them right up there in the NL Central with the Reds. I think it's them and the Reds right now and the Cardinals. I mean,
sure,
it's a three-team race. There's still a lot of time for things to shake out. But I like this move for the Brewers. Like I said, it shocked the hell out of me.
Well, that's the other thing, you know, that Central like that. You know, Votto's not going anywhere but up, you know. And you know, now that I think the Cardinals, didn't they pick up Dunn?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so for the Brewers Brewers to really be, you know, contenders, they had no choice but to you know, to show themselves up a bit and go out and get some talent.
Yeah. So, you know, with that, I want to close out the baseball talk, and I want to shift gears real quick while we still got time in our first hour. And Mark Cuban came out this past week talking all types of madness, talking about, I'll lay down $500 million. If we get a playoff going, I'll pay the school. We'll work out a payment plan. I just need them to promise that they're going to play for me in my playoff. Did y'all hear about this?
No.
You didn't hear about this? Man.
He wants a football playoff?
Yes, he wants the college football playoff, and he's willing to bankroll it. He's willing to put out $500 million if he can get, and I don't know the exact number of teams, but if he can get teams to promise that they won't play in a bowl, but they will play in his tournament, he'll have payouts for schools. So, you know, he's trying to – He's working on the assumption that he believes that the only reason that there isn't a major playoff right now is because they don't have the money to fund. It's not financially profitable for schools. And he's saying, I'll make it financially profitable if I can get a commitment that you all are going to be playing in my tournament. So it's real interesting. I mean, because –
see, that's kind of a USFL mentality, you know. You hope that you can bankrupt the bowl system as it stands, but
that's what the NCAA did to the NIT in basketball.
Sure,
you know, the NIT
sure.
used
and
to be the big joint,
but
and the NCAA came in and said, "We gonna do something a little different."
But see, the NCAA
and that slowly grew.
They had the teams. They had the teams. The NIT was the private entity. They were afforded the opportunity to do that. You know, where you going to go against the NCAA? You know, you really have to get a serious commitment. You know, mark the bank. You find yourself with a tournament for the first couple of years, and be outbid. You know, once you know if it is a success, he could be outbid by something corporate in a couple of years. I mean, it makes sense, and I would love to see what these bowls are generating, what kind of revenue they really bring in to, you know, because you can see the payouts, and you understand, you know, what these schools and conferences are getting, but what are the bowls actually generating? I mean, we talked a couple weeks ago about, you know, these executives that just run a one-day event and how much they're making. And I think Mark Cuban is looking at it and saying, you know, if I could do that with 25 games, or 30 games, it would be my best interest to try to finance that. I could put up $500 million if I can cover my expenses and be that guy. it's a win-win situation for him.
And I think the problem with that is that the bowl system has another subculture that's very important to universities around alumni, around a whole bunch of other things that benefits more institutions than a playoff. So we look at all these bowl games that are being offered, and at each of these bowls, they're beyond the money that they're getting as teams participating in these bowls, it's an opportunity to rally that alumni base and have a whole bunch of events that's planned around that, that is part of developing that school's brand. And, you know, looking at some of the schedules that are out there, I mean, looking at Wisconsin's schedule for the weekend rallies that they're going to be doing at the pier and all these other things that they got going on in terms of, that's an entire process, entire lead up, the whole alumni association out there. I mean, it's an entire program and that's beyond what you make just in the bowl and how it generates. So I think all those things, I mean, I've been spending some time reading lately just about this whole evolution of this, you know, really sprouting out of the late 50s and 60s, looking at this, and there's a whole bunch of reasons why they'll push back on Cuba. Some of it's control, because it's really about, it's kind of a really narcissist kind of system kind of way that people are going. It's really about, you got a control piece that's happening. They just want to control, even though there might be the possibility of making more money. And more of it's also about building those own institutional brands that they fought to do back in, I think it was the, mid 80s to early 90s. It all broke off and they did a lot of that. So there's a lot that's going on here that, I mean, Cuban is making a lot of sense, but there's a whole other subculture around these bowls that isn't part of that equation that's very important to universities.
Yeah, I was listening to, I think it was, it was Van Pelt and Russillo on ESPN. You know, we listen to sports radio, so we don't, you know, we listen to what other people are talking about. We don't hide that. So I was listening to Van Pelt and Russillo, and they had the head of the BCS on, and he said something to the effect of, you know, and he kind of gave that old pimp line that college folks like to give, that, you know, it's about, for a lot of these young men, that last game can still be a victory. It can be a meaningful game. It can be a bowl. It can have that final experience your senior year. And that's important to institutions. That's important to the NCAA, is that it's not just about finding a winner or finding a champion, but allowing these young men to have this opportunity to, you know, finish their careers out with a meaningful, fun experience, and the bowl system provides that experience that a tournament wouldn't. Because ultimately, I mean, you know, as you guys all know from high school up, you know, when you got a tournament set up, more likely you lose in your last game unless you're the champion. And that's an incentive to go out there and win. But, you know, other than that, I mean, if you don't win the championship, then you are going to lose your last game. And so this provides a different experience. And so that's one line. Again, it's some pimp shit. But that's another line that they was throwing out there. And, you know, again, I think you hit on a point about the whole culture of the bowl system and how it provides a ton of opportunities for these people to interact with alumni and to have these, you know, getaways for alumni and the big role that it plays in for the entire institutional community to have these bowl experiences.
Sure, that's a system that they don't want to give up on. It's not just a game anymore. It's, you know, especially, you know, and the big bowls used to always be the big bowls. The Rose Bowl was always, you know, the parade and, you know, the time before and the events. And those have gone from, you know, 2-day events, 3-day events to, you know, a whole week. People are taking off a whole week and celebrating the fact that the Badgers are going to be in Pasadena. And these other communities are setting up, you know, events and gatherings and all of these, you know, you can bet that the university expects to generate quite a bit of revenue, you know, for the university just from, you know, the alumni support that's going to be there. So, you know, they've gone from, you know, just a 3-day weekend to a whole week of events. And, it's, you know, families are going, you know, to... You can bet that most of the team will have their family there for the week. And so it becomes an experience for them to cherish for a lifetime and let them have that. What Cubaine has tried to do is certainly commercialize the whole thing. nobody's going to put up $500 million without the without the hope that, you know, they're going to get something. He ain't doing it just so he can see who the champion is.
Hey, hell no.
And so the NCAA,
ain't that much curiosity in the world.
Exactly. You know, if that's the case, you know, the NCAA could, you know, seek a financial package from more than one person that might even top a $500 million offer. You know, committee might be trying to force that. But at the end of the day, you know, the NCAA is not going to give up that golden goose. They are going to control that. Right now,
and the NCAA
have,
is not going to give it up, and the major conference presidents aren't going to give it up. You know, if you're in one of those major conferences, you is not going to give up the foothold that you have on that $21 million payout that you get for making one of those BCS bowls, compared to a TCU who gets $6 million for, you know, making it as an at-large team. You're not going to get that away.
And what everyone has said, you know, is that the Big Ten is the biggest obstacle to a playoff situation, because the Big Ten has leveraged themselves against all the other conferences to make the most money for each of their teams. You know, so when you look at something like this, this would be something that teams would want to vote on. And do you think Indiana is going to agree to a playoff? Indiana would never make as much money from a playoff than they will from this bowl situation.
Right. I was reading this a while ago, about an hour or two ago. You hit it right on the head. I mean, when you talk, using Indiana as a great example of this, because that's where, you know, they had the College Football Association, that's what they had, and then Notre Dame broke away. I think Notre Dame signed that, like, a $38 million deal with NBC, which began to begin this whole thing where, and I think by 96, the College Football Association was dissolved. And so then you had all these different conferences, these different teams making these deals. And you're right, it's not the Michigans and Ohio States of the world. No, we're not Michigan anymore. The Ohio States of the world and the Nebraskas and the LSUs of the world. It's the Vanderbilts. It's the Indianas. It's, you know, it's these teams.
The whole Big East.
It's the whole Big East.
But what it is revenue sharing at its finest. It's revenue sharing at its finest. Every one of these schools, every one of these conferences, from the top to the bottom, if their conference, like the Big Ten, puts X amount of teams in the top 10 or the top 25, you know, that whole conference gets lifted. That whole conference makes money. That whole conference is sharing the television revenues. They have that. That is their brand. The Big Ten next year with Nebraska is going to make more money. You know, it's impossible for them not to, because they are probably going to place, you know, one more team in the top 25. And so Indiana on any given Sunday has an opportunity to fill their stadium because of the four or five teams within the conference that are in the top 25. And that's just during the regular season. That isn't talking about the television revenue or anything else. So you are going to get Indiana to vote on a championship format, because if you do that and you ever have a situation like Whitewater and Union, then all of a sudden you lose money every year, and you'll continue to lose money. You'll have a UConn situation where you will have teams loading up.
Right. And the other thing is, football is the tipping point. People say, well, what about the NCAA basketball? Football is the one that's always driven this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And football is the football, doing it this way, is the last defense against being viewed as a commercialized product where you got hired help. So, you know, they're not employees, they're not laborers. This is really about scholarship and education. The bowl system is the last barrier to that. If people can talk, well, they do it in Division III, they do it in Division II, it ain't Division I. and it's the last defense against these programs, even though everybody else in the world, we've already talked about being viewed as anything but what they're supposed to be viewed as. So that, I think that's why this thing is not going to go that way, even with a good idea, even with $500 million from Cuba. That would be an admission that folks are not ready to do.
Yeah, you know, you get a team like Indiana who will be just giddy to go to the, you know, Visine Bowl down in Florida, you know, an opportunity to, you know,
check
get them in a playoff situation. Exactly.
Yeah, 34 bowls right now. That's 34
right.
Different spots. That's a lot of
money.
You know,
that's 34 bowls. So how many? That's what, 68 teams?
Yeah.
And again,
like, all you got to do is win six games, and you bowl eligible.
And the other side of
that,
there's
security in that for coaches, ADs, there's security in that. We made a bowl last year. You can't fire me.
Right. And the thing, if you go to a playoff format and you took 64 teams, what you're going to have is a seeded situation. You think Indiana wants to go down there and have to play somebody? Shit. You know, that ain't going to be for a good day. You know, they don't have any real high hopes to go through six games and win a national championship. They're going to go down to, you know, Lubbock, Texas, and come home with an ass whooping. They don't want to do that. They'd rather go to the Visine Bowl, play somebody more of their caliber, have a chance to win.
Let me ask you a question. What the hell is the Beef O'Brady Bowl?
Bullshit. Just say that out loud.
What Beef O'Brady? What is that?
I'm sitting here watching the new Orange Bowl. You know, now you can have, your city can have a bowl. Beloit might get a bowl. Hell, you don't know.
I'm telling you, man. They're going to have a bowl. They're going to have a What's Happening Bowl. Bowl just named after whatever. Like, when I was growing up, man, I used to take pride in, like, knowing all the bowls, like the Cotton Bowl, the Sugar Bowl. It was always named after something that was known for that region where the game was held.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Sugar Bowl, the Orange Bowl, the Cotton Bowl. You know what I'm saying? Now it's like the, you know, the Google Bowl. Come on now. Go to the Google Bowl. What is this, man? The Hawaii Bowl. It's like that.
The New Mexico Bowl. I love the Dodgers, but the Outback Bowl. You know, come on. You go
to the New Mexico Bowl. What is the state going to get a bowl? The New Mexico Bowl.
Hey, get that money.
Right.
Get
but
that money.
If you're in a warm climate, you can bring two teams. You know, I remember when Wisconsin wasn't very good at football and how they would go to bowls and just, you know, bowls were giddy to get Wisconsin. Because folks from Wisconsin were just giddy to get the hell out of here in January. So if you had a warm place, Wisconsin was a real attractive team to have. Now, you know, they are, you know, a contender, and they are getting more affluent bowls. But I can remember how they talked about some of these bowls. You know, they were like, man, we hope – you know, we hope we can get Wisconsin because they bring everybody.
Yeah. So, I mean, Cuban could put all the money on the table he wants. It just doesn't seem like that. It seems like this system is entrenched and it ain't going nowhere. So, you know, pimping is as pimping does, you know, as a pimp once said.
Who
wants to close down the You Drove Humanitarian Bowl? You drove. Like, who wants to set that down?
Man, sometimes I'm like, you don't even know, like the cats. I mean, because you know, I had a brother that played D1 football, and you know, he was at Wisconsin when they went to, I think they went to the Capital One Bowl, and he came back and it was like Christmas for us, man. He was giving me all types of watches and gifts, and he's like, yeah, man, they just gave us all this stuff, you know. So what do you get? You wonder what you get at, like, one of these lesser bowls, like a humanitarian bowl. You know, the Capital One Bowl is kind of a mid-level bowl, you know, but it's interesting. If nothing else, it's interesting.
I mean, NIU had to go to Boise, Idaho. I mean, I just know my Husky alumni friend
We're glad to go to Idaho. We bowling in Idaho.
You know they brought back a bag of spuds.
But it's something, man. It's something, I guess.
But again, can you imagine NIU wanting to go and play, you know? I mean, they had a great year. Do you want to cap off? Really, they had a great year. For NIU, they did wonderful. Do you really want to go and play a seeded team and go home, you know, right afterwards? Wouldn't you rather go to a whole week of events where you are the celebrities in town that week? That's the experience. The game has, you know, unless you're playing for one of these title shots, you know, you really don't want to, you don't want to go and not have a chance to be a celebrity for a week. You don't want to be the victim, you know. Play somebody on your level and duke it out.
All right. Hey, fellas, y'all there?
Yeah, you got it.
Okay, yeah, we had a little bit of technical difficulties. I don't know what happened, man.
I'm like, let me call in. Somebody from Boise got mad at us. That's what the switch for.
Somebody from Boise hit the switch on
it. He used to be in there, that's one of them
Wikipedia hackers, you know. You done messed around and got one of the Wikipedia hackers out there.
Hey, them boys ain't no joke, man.
No.
You want to piss them off, man. They have all types of documents about you out on the streets.
We should do trivia on, like, we should say the bowl name and, like, what city is it in?
Right.
Like, right,
that would
guess the city.
I mean, this is crazy. I'm up here. The R&L Carrier New Orleans Bowl.
I'm watching the New Orleans Bowl. It's Troy in Ohio.
Yeah, man.
You got that right. My goodness. So the Superdome got like three bowls, I think. That one probably.
That's
Super
the thing
bowl.
Too is that they all at the same venues. Like
that's right.
It's not like a different venue. If I'm in Superdome, I'm just making up bowls so that people can come back and spend some money.
They are. I think the Superdome has like three bowls, like the same guy, same event planner is pimping three different parties. He got Snoop at one, he got T.I. at the other. He pimping three different parties. He's like, I'm going to have three different parties.
The beauty of it is, it's Tuesday night, you know. It's December 21st. It's Tuesday night. You think New Orleans could put that many people in the Superdome on a Tuesday night any other time if they didn't
have
a bowl game?
This is
better than a concert.
And the reason why I'm saying that is that's what Cuban is up against. He's up against that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You messed up my yearly party. Oh, that's
right. Tough. Yeah, he's got a tough road to hoe. We'll see how he do it. No pun intended. You know, but we'll see how that goes. So let's move on quick and get into the NBA. You know, in the second hour, we got the NBA talk, and then we're going to get deep into the NFL talk as the NFL season wraps up. A few topics I wanted to hit on with the NBA right now as things start to pick up, and we're seeing a lot of movement in the league as teams try and position themselves and get in position to compete. The Orlando Magic made a huge deal, man. I saw this go by on a ticker, and, like, it was so many damn players involved. I mean, did they just switch rosters with a couple teams? But in case you weren't aware, I mean, by this time, most people are aware of the deal, but the Magic picked up Gilbert Arenas, they picked up Jason Richardson, they picked up Hedo Turkoglu, and they picked up Earl Clark. They gave up Rashard Lewis. He went to Washington. And then they gave up Vince Carter, Michael Peaches, and Marcin Gortat to the Phoenix Suns. So good deal, bad deal. Holler at me. What you think?
I say it's a good deal. I mean, sometimes there's times where you go into the party with the same date, and you look up and you say, we really ain't going to get married. So I need to switch up. And I think they just realized they needed to energize. They weren't going to be prepared to challenge the Celtics or any of the top echelon teams. And they realized, you know, they saw what we all saw. Vince Carter is Vince Carter. Other than say, you know, he like Trevor Burby. You know, he's up there in the rankings, but he really ain't no champion. And Rashard Lewis is a 6'11 jump shooter who don't like to post up and get physical. I mean, you got two cats who should be giving you more and giving it to you. So, you know, you got to switch it up or fear to lose Dwight Howard. I mean, he knew he was going to war with some cats who had glass jaws. He was just thinking, damn, you know. So I think they made the necessary move. I think it's going to be a good move. I think Agent Zero is the one because now you got a cat who's unpredictable. And he's the kind of guy.
Mad Max 2.0.
That's right. Mad Max 2.0. He's the kind of guy that's crazy enough to go for 30 in game 6 and 7 against the Celtics. You'd be like, how the hell did he get to the finals?
He is.
If he's healthy enough, you know, Agent Zero ain't been Agent Zero for a while. You know, I think they looked at the Celtics, and I think they looked at the Heat and realized that if they didn't make some moves, then they're not going, you know, they've progressed, you know, for the last 3 years. And then they watch these other teams. You know, right now the Celtics are not a joke. They're playing good basketball. And the Heat, you know.
Without Rondo.
Without Rondo, exactly. So if you're sitting down there, you're going, you know, we have to do something. Otherwise, you know, we right now are the third best team in the East. If we are the third best team in the East, we have to do something, you know, or like you say, risk losing Howard at some point because he's not going to want to, you know, he wants to win. Everybody wants to win. You got to make those moves. And when Miami started to take off the way that they did, you had to do something. And you realize you're paying Rashard Lewis a lot of money. And you're paying
$18 million.
You're just not getting any returns out of them. You've got to take a chance. And if you can get a player like Arenas, you know, you have to take a chance on a guy like that. You know, it was, you're talking about 3-4 short years ago where he was the best player, I thought, in the NBA, or at least the most exciting. He was the Michael Vick of the NBA. You didn't know what you're going to get any given night. He'd go just straight out crazy on you. But you know, he got hurt, and you know, really hasn't been the same. But you have to take that chance.
Yeah.
And you have
so
to
my take on it is, I felt like it was a good deal in the fact that they needed to do something. I felt like it was a bad deal in the fact that they got smaller. Because nowadays,
right,
you're really trying to win, you can't get smaller. And if they had been able to make that deal without giving up their backup center, I think they would have came away looking nice. But
right,
when you give up another big, and now Dwight Howard is really the only big you got, that scares me a little bit, especially when you're looking at trying to compete with the Boston, when you're looking at trying to compete with the Lakers or even the Mavericks or the Spurs now, when you're looking at trying to compete with that group of teams, and you just got smaller, even though you got more explosives, you got smaller. And in a 7-game series, I think that's going to hurt them because Dwight Howard has been foul prone throughout his career because he does challenge a lot of shots. And so,
right,
I mean, I think that makes them vulnerable to a team. I think that makes them more vulnerable to a team like the Heat or even to a team like Atlanta that attacks the rim a lot. because now he can't protect it like he would normally protect it, because now he got to go sit down. And when he goes sit down, I don't even know who their backup center is at this point. Who are they bringing in? You know, and I know most rosters pretty well. I don't even know who's a real legitimate option to come in and play the five spot for them now that Gortat's gone. If they could have kept Gortat, like I said, they would have came away looking nice. I mean, they would have came away looking real good.
Right.
They didn't know. They gave up. They got smaller. And I don't think that's going to help them long term come May and June, unless they can make another deal. You know, from the talks of it, another deal is on the way, but that's the biggest drawback of this deal to me is that they got smaller.
When you get rid of Lewis and Carter, you know, I hope somebody told Arenas not to unpack his bags, because he might not be here very long. You know,
yeah.
They already showed that, you know, their sense of loyalty is with Howard. That's where they're building their team around, and they're ready to experiment a bit. So,
yeah,
they may not be done. They may not be done at all.
Yeah, I think they're gonna get another big. Yeah, I think they're gonna get another big with it. But I mean,
would it have to?
You know, and they lost tonight. But even, I mean, one play I can tell you was the difference from watching them. You know, they showed a highlight the other night, and just the entry pass from Ito to Howard down low from the top, and his vision looking over the top, the fact that he's bringing people out to respect him and creating that passing lane, and you watching just the potential of what could evolve with them, and the way that they put stress on people, because somebody like Hedo going to force you to bring a big out to cover him, or a small guy he's going to put down in the post. You know, that's saying if he can recapture, but what he's able to do. But then you come back with Jay Rich, who's going to give you some spacing. He can play a little bit of D, and then he's going to give you something different. So I think they got, you know, they're going to go get another bid. They're going to find a way to fill that spot. But I think they got a little bit more explosive. And sometimes you need to know where that scoring is going to come from, especially if they're going to try and take Howard away. You got some guys who you know going to go at people. And I wasn't confident about Lewis and Carter being those kind of guys who are going to go at folks. I know Hedo.
Yeah, I always felt that when they made the finals, Hedo was the reason that they made the finals that year. Having Turkoglu and Lewis together made that team special. When they let go of Turkoglu, I was like, they're not going to be the same team, especially when they brought in Vince, because I just don't trust him. But when they let go of Turkoglu, because what you had when you had Lewis and Turkoglu was you had two 6'10 guys who could play on the perimeter and cause matchup problems. You had two 6'10, 6'11 guys who could shoot the three, stretch the floor, and you wasn't necessarily giving up a lot size-wise by having them out there. They still were long, athletic dudes who could move. You know, they're not the best. Neither one of them is the best defender in the world, but they're still 6'10". You know, so there's something to be said for being that tall. So they allowed them to still look big and still play somewhat big, but be very versatile. And then when they went with a more conventional lineup, bringing in Carter, you know, at that point I was like, I think they lost what got them there, and that was they caused matchup problems, because then you couldn't double Howard with your power forward. You couldn't double off Howard with your power forward because Hedo's standing 23 feet away from the basket. That's a long-ass way to run for a four-man, you know? So I think that's why they brought Hedo back, is because, as you were laying out, D, he has some playmaking ability. He can shoot from the outside. And that's going to give them, again, that's going to give them a different dimension. But I just think, you know, for me, losing the big really hurts them. It really hurts them. For all the gains that I made, that they may have made offensively, you know, you guys know it as well as I do. You got to have bigs nowadays. In today's NBA, if you want to compete for real, you got to have two or three bigs who can give you some D and who can play some decent minutes for you. And they got one right now.
Yeah,
they got one guy.
Daniel Horton is
They got Howard, and, you know, Daniel Horton is still, you know, I don't even know if he's done growing yet. You know what I'm saying? So, good luck with that. But, you know, I do like the explosiveness that it gives them. And I do like adding Agent Zero to the mix. Like I said, when we talked about this a couple weeks ago, we hit on it. I was like, they need a little crazy in the locker room. Like, that team is you need a cat that just don't know no better. You know, and I think that's what Gilbert is. Like you said, he crazy enough to go off of 35 in game six because he just don't know no better. You know, you need a little bit of that. You know, the same thing with Houston. You know, back in the mid-90s when, you know, Akeem was knocking on the door, trying to get there. Mad Max come in the picture. You know what I'm saying? They bring in Clyde, Mad Max, you know, and allow Mad Max to come off the bench and just be that dude in the second unit who can just come out there and not know no better. You know, and hopefully that's what Gil can do, you know. But, again, I think losing Gortat is going to hurt them. And, you know, and that's a, you know, you get one of them the Eastern European dudes, man. You get an Eastern European big that likes to bang, man. That's valuable. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, that was a big dude.
And Marcus, I'm going to say, I just looking up. Yeah, they're going to do some, because looking at Orton, they said he might go under the knife and be out into the All-Star break. So they definitely going to be making a move for another big because there are other folks are all in the power forward spot. Malik Allen
of them are bangers. You know, none of them are bangers. I mean, they got like Ryan Anderson, who's a shooter. You know, they got Earl Clark, who's a perimeter player, even though he's 6'10".
Yeah.
You know, they just got a lot of 6'10 perimeter guys. They need one more banger, at least one more banger, to survive in the East.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and speaking of the East, you know, last week was a big week, and I don't know if y'all got a chance to watch, but I watched both of the games at MSG where the Knicks, you know, came off a big week before that, and they had the Celtics in town, and then they had the Heat come in on Friday. And so I watched those games. Were you guys able to check those games at all?
I saw a little bit of the Celtics.
Yeah, the biggest thing to me was it was interesting to watch because it seemed like, you know, that Celtics game was a great game. It really was a good, fun game to watch. But it seemed to me like the crowd at the Garden didn't quite know what to make of this, New York Knicks team. Like, they was kind of like, man, this is fool's gold. And they kind of know it's fool's gold. Cause like it wasn't like it was in Cleveland when Miami came back and the crowd and the building was hyped from the jump. The MSG crowd was kind of just chilling, like, let's see how this goes before we get into this. And then it started to get competitive. Then they started to get involved. But I think that's where New York is with this team right now. The city of New York is trying to get. It seemed like that way in the Heat game too. Is that they just trying to get a feel for, like, okay, who are these dudes? Are they really what we think they could be? Are they really going to contend? Are they really going to play well against these teams? Because it seemed like in the Boston game, the crowd was just waiting on Boston to just put their foot on their throat and be like, okay, yeah, we done playing with y'all. And when Boston did, that kind of got the crowd going a little bit more. But it seemed like the whole game, they was waiting on the team, the Knicks, to start to play like the Knicks. You know, it was a little shell. The crowd was a little shell-shocked, like they were in trauma therapy. Like, they hadn't seen good basketball in so long. They just was like, oh, we gonna wait and see if this goes wrong.
Well, I don't think that they're fooling themselves and thinking that they're going to, you know, run out and win a national champion or win an NBA title. But they have to be excited about what potential this team has. You know, it's a player or two from truly being a contender. So they can get behind them, you know. But they're still cutting out to these games like the Celtics and like the Heat to see the Celtics and the Heat. They know what the Knicks are all about. They know that they're not going to make too much noise. But they have to be excited about the potential.
Yeah, and what I like, I mean, they got some pieces. I mean, Gallinari, he was killing the Celtics. He was doing the Paul Pierce, what Paul Pierce normally does to other folks. And he just so they got some players who play. Stoudemire, you know, at the end of the game, the old stuff showed up. So it's the things, and this is my whole thing about New York, is that I think they'll make it interesting. They'll make the playoffs, you know. But down at the end of that game against the Celtics, what did they do? They went right at Stoudemire, and your best player has got to step up, and he could get that stop. That's the one thing in his career he's never been able to do defensively is make that big stop. And that's the other part of being, you know, if he could have made that big stop, you know, when he had the little step back move on him, you know, but they went right at him like, okay, we know you can't stop us. And that right there is the piece that he, you know, that's the finishing piece. But that's also a product of the way the coach plays. And so they'll look exciting throughout this year, but when it comes to that money time in the playoffs, it's that play, that possession is what it's going to come down to. Can they – it's not about Stoudemire, you know, getting 39 points. It's when it comes down to them, it's just – because what they look like were the old Dallas Mavericks. And they can – you know, they go to – but at the end, they go right at Dirk. And Dirk couldn't make no stop. You
right.
know, Dirk couldn't do – he couldn't come up defensively. They could always score, but it couldn't come with that defensive stop to end the game. And that's the thing that they got to work on. We know they can score, but can they stop you in those key possessions? That's the key. And that's what I'm interested to see how they mature in that area. Y'all still there?
I'm still here.
Oh, okay.
Did we lose Marcus?
Huh?
Did we lose Marcus?
I don't know if we lost. It's probably just you and I up here, which will be all right. And they got the big ass winter up going on up there in Madison. He probably got all kind of stuff messed up his frequency. You know, to go outside, stand on a snowman, put one foot up in the air, and wave a magic wand. You get a frequency. It's cold.
But we're both dialed into the show.
I know. He need to dial in himself, but he the one on the switchboard. Well, we can carry this conversation on until you come back.
But, you know, I agree with you. You know, the thing that I would worry about if I were New York in trying to keep, you know, continuing to play like this, if you don't get Stoudemire some help, I always worry about Stoudemire's health. You know, and, you know, the way he's playing, you know, he's doing what he's supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
You know, he's playing his ass off. And you know, I realize you went out and you signed a big contract and you will pay him and you expect a lot out of him. But do you want to kill him before you get the rest of the pieces in place?
That's right.
And
hey, I'm back. Sorry about that.
Okay. You know, do you
I don't know what to do with my phone, man.
Do you overplay
that Stoudemire? Go ahead.
Do you overplay Stoudemire just to fill the seats, you know? I mean, he's so competitive in both of those games. You know, he was doing all that he could.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that, you know, that there's a situation there, too, that they hopefully will go out and make some moves and get some things going.
I mean,
did you guys hear
what
I said about Stoudemire at all? Did you hear any of that?
No, I didn't hear that. We didn't hear what you said. I know I made my statement. So go ahead.
You were gone.
Oh, so what I was saying is that Stoudemire, in his article, he had this quote that he had gone into our defense. And so what you have is you have a guy who is coming from the NBA from high school. He goes into the Phoenix system that didn't require him to play defense. And he's back with D'Antoni. So you got a man who's been in the league for 8-9 years, and he's never been taught how to play defense. And so that's why, you know, you brought up the point about Boston going right at him. Everybody in the league knows that about him, is that he don't know how to play defense because he hasn't had to play defense.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why – you know, you see teams going at Amari Stoudemire at the end. That's why you're going to see teams going at him at the end of the game. He really don't know what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, look at some of these statistics. I mean, they're second in points per game. They're 20th in rebounding per game, 13th in assists per game, and they're 28th in points allowed. So that right there, I mean, if you compare them to – you know, some of the top teams, you know, in the league, you know, you're not gonna see those same, you know, numbers from some of these top teams. in the league, and that's where, you know, you gotta talk about what championship ball is all about, and that's why, I mean, D'Antoni is a smart guy. I never understand when smart guys like that don't get the things that are so obvious to everyone else.
Yeah, it baffles me myself. I can't understand it either. I mean, I think you have to see what happened in Phoenix, how things just didn't work out there, and how I think in Phoenix he had the perfect roster to run the system. I mean, he had a pass first point guard who could still shoot and score. He had, you know, Sean Marion on the wing. He had Stoudemire. He had shooters all around those guys. He even had like a Barbosa coming off the bench. You know, they had pieces there. They had guys who fit that system really well, and they still couldn't get over the hump. So, you know, it's interesting I don't know what makes him think this is going to be any different in New York. And maybe he doesn't think it's going to be any different. Maybe he knows he's going to entertain the people of New York. And they can make it close. They may compete. But at the end of the day, I don't think he can believe that his system is going to ever win a championship. He must, or else he wouldn't run it. But I don't know. I don't share that opinion.
Mm. Yeah,
I'm with that one. So, yeah, I mean, you know, the league is going to do what it's going to do. Melo might have a trade coming up soon, so we'll have to keep an eye for that. But what I want to do now, we got about 30 minutes left. We got to talk about the most important league in the world. That's the NFL. And, I mean, there's a lot going down in the league right now. A lot going down. Real quick, sucks to be a Giants fan. I actually turned that game off, man. The Vic and Eagles was looking so bad. I was rooting for the Eagles to win. I was rooting for Vic to do well for once and the Eagles to win. And I just turned the game off, man. And, you know, I was at my mama's house and we were doing a little early Christmas celebration with the family. And, you know, we turned the game back on and it was tied up. And we were like, man, what the hell happened?
That's,
you know,
what
we trying to figure
man.
Out what the hell happened. You know, when we turned the game off, Vic was having a horrible day. We turned the game back on. He could do for 240 yards, 3 touchdowns, and ran for 130 yards. So, and then we watched the last play. And watching this play was, in basketball, you lose on the last, like I've lost games on half court shots. You know, St. Norbert's, up in St. Norbert's. You know, 2001, and with like 1.2 seconds left, dude hit a three-quarter court shot, beat us. After we get a tip in with 1 second left, and we think we got the game won, dude tosses in a three-quarter court shot. That is the worst feeling in the world. So, but it happens like that. You know what I'm saying? In basketball, it happens like that. You lost. I can't imagine watching the dude run 65 yards with no time on the clock.
Again, it isn't like, you know, when somebody hits a shot on you, you know, you know that they got to get the ball in bounds. You know that. Here was a situation where the punter just kicked the ball. And he should have just kicked it out of bounds. Did he forget that, or did he kick it bad? I mean, you know, did he not realize that he needed to kick that ball out of bounds?
It was a high snap. Yeah, it was a high snap.
He wanted to get it off. He didn't want to get it blocked.
He might as well have got it blocked. They would have probably had to run a play at least.
But you still. Yeah, I saw Coughlin was coming out there to do a Woody Hayes. I thought he was coming out there to punch that kid. You know, he came out there yelling at him. I thought he was gonna punch you. You know, and then he apologized later and he said, you know, the punter, and I think too, you know, that Eli kind of saved him too. You know, he called that team meeting and said, you know, you can't put the game blame on him. You know, we got beat. Which also, you know, was a way of saying, you know, you guys on defense suck too. But, you know, it's just, you know.
Yeah, I mean, an onside kick. You had a whole bunch of things that went wrong.
Right. I mean, it was just they had a meltdown, and that's, you know, and that's not what you're used to out of New York, because they're kind of like cornflakes, you know. They ain't got no sugar on them. They're just who they are. You know, they got two good running backs. They got a quarterback that looks like, you know, he's cookie cutter. And they're kind of plain Jane. They just play really good football. But for them to melt down the way that they did, you know, this one of the things that I was hearing, you know, this might be Coughlin's last year. That could have been the game that stuck the knife in his ass. You know, stick a fork in it, he's done. Because Cowher is out there, you know, and New York would do well to entertain that, you know. Coughlin is that, you know, if he can make Tiki Barber retire, you know, things can't be all that good up there. You know, they want
to. Yeah, it was just crazy to watch, man. It was, you know, and
I
agree with your analogy as a cornflakes, but I would say they're hood cornflakes. Because one thing that they will happen from time to time is that you pour your bowl of hood cornflakes and every now and then you get a roach. That's something that ain't supposed to be there. And that's what the Giants are, man. Like, every now and then they have one. They do this from time to time during the season where they have a game where it's like, who the hell is this team? This is not the team that you were last week. And they'll do this every five or six games. They'll have a game where they just do some boneheaded stuff. And you sitting there trying to figure out, like, this ain't my cornflakes.
Right. But they can go on now and go undefeated for the rest of the year and win a championship. You know, you don't know with this team. You know, we talked about them early in the year, and I didn't think they were that good. And then all of a sudden, you know, they just start putting game after game together. You know, they do have the talent to be contenders. But I think, you know, I think the other thing that everybody, not just, you know, everybody's realizing that the Eagles with Michael Vick is something special. It's just something truly special. And, you know, the way that he's playing, you know, I'm afraid, you know, 20 years from now, we're going to be talking about Michael Vick like we talked about Ali when he was gone for a couple years, you know. Like, man, is this, did we miss it? You know, are we just seeing the tail end of his greatness or, you know, this guy is truly something special.
He wanted
to get into, you know, Michael Vick or Tom Brady, who's the MVP, you know, the Eagles would not be where they're at with Kevin Cole. You know, I don't think the Patriots would be where they're at without Tom Brady, but I don't think anybody in the NFL wants to play the Eagles. Not after what they saw, what happened to the Giants. It's like, you know, you can't even be three touchdowns up.
Yeah. That is an explosive team. Like, they can put up points very quickly. They can put up points in the blink of an eye. And that's a team that's never out of a game. You know, they're never out of a game. You got the most explosive player at quarterback in the league. You got the fastest receiver I've seen. You know, I mean, they got two blazing receivers with blazing speed. I mean, that team is going. You know, that's a scary ass team, man. That's a scary ass team.
I've never known a quarterback with such a great arm. And the ability just to take off and make you look like an idiot, you know. I mean, he runs as well as any running back in the league, and he throws the ball as well as any quarterback in the league. How can you not look at him like the MVP? I mean, and this isn't anything new. They talk about, you know, how he's playing a more heady game and whatnot, and I think it's certainly maturity. And would he have progressed without a prison stay? I have to believe he would have. You can say what you want about his maturity, but he's at a point in his career where, you know, there's certain things that matter to him more than others, and that comes with just, you know, with maturity.
Yeah,
it's incredible the way he's playing this year.
Yeah, and I would say, I think that comeback was yeah, a lot about who Michael Vick has become. You know, in fact, that he's playing from the pocket out. And that's why he's putting so much pressure on the defense, is that he's so willing to stay in the pocket and make throws and only decides to run when he thinks that's a good advantage of the game plan, not just as a bailout. And that's what's making it so difficult on these defenses, is that, you know, he's going 1, 2, 3 receivers, and he's doing all that before he's thinking about running. And he's doing a lot of different things. That's putting so much pressure on him. And he's got these young guys around him who idolize him and used to play him in their video games, and they just happy to be around him. And they playing like there's no care in the world. I mean, DeSean Jackson, for all the antics and everything else, that kind of, he's our modern-day version of Billy White Shoes Johnson. At first I was like, oh, he's showboating again, but it was just a smart play. Like, I'm going to let the clock run out. But
you weren't going to do anything. You know, you weren't going to get the ball back.
The best scene, which is the microcosm of all of it, when he on his return, is when the punter went to make the tackle and missed it and just laid on the ground.
So he didn't miss it, D. He wasn't even close. You know, that to me, he just dove on the ground.
Like, it didn't make it look like he made an effort in film session.
Yeah, he wasn't 6 feet close enough to make a tackle. I think he just dove on the ground like, he dove in the direction, like he got shot,
like somebody in the stands from New York, and he just laid on the ground.
Yeah. Hoffman ran out on the field, I thought he was going to hit him. I'm like, oh, this is Woody Hayes right here. He's out his mind.
And your boy wanted to walk off, but he didn't walk off. He's a rookie. Didn't quite walk off. He wanted to ignore him, but he couldn't. It was the worst scene in the world that you could ever look at.
He was getting yelled at, like, you know, he pissed himself or something. Coughlin was yelling at him. He's looking around like, you know, am I on TV? Is my mom watching this? You know.
He's looking around like, get out of my face. Like, I don't know, I messed up. I know how to play football. I know he just scored a touchdown and we lost. All right? Like, right. I know I messed up. I don't need you to tell me that in front of all these people. You know, that's what he's looking like. Like, get out of my face, man.
I knew I was supposed to kick it out of the ball. I know it.
And I wanted to, but it didn't go the way I wanted it to go. It didn't happen like I planned it. And so it is what it is. It ain't my fault all of them didn't tackle him. Even if I did kick it in bounds, they got 11 people. We got 11 people. Somebody could have tackled him.
Somebody.
You know, I know he just wanted to say, this is the third touchdown they scored. This ain't the first. You know, they just, you know, you can blame me for this one, but somebody need to be yelled at. You know, you didn't yell at them fellas when they were scoring that other shit. You know?
Yeah. Hey, that's when he turned around like, why is the game in my hands anyway? I'm the damn punter.
Right.
Why is the game in my hands anyway?
You do not want to play Philadelphia. I don't care what, you know. If you have, you know, aspirations to win a championship, Philadelphia is not on your agenda. I wouldn't want to play Tom Brady and the Patriots, but I certainly don't want to, because, you know, you could have a game in hand and they'll come back and embarrass you.
Yeah, the teams I don't want to mess with right now, I wouldn't want to mess with – Baltimore looked good against New Orleans.
Sure.
I wouldn't want to mess with Baltimore, and I definitely wouldn't want to mess with New England or the Eagles. Those are the teams that seem kind of scary right now. Like,
and what's funny is
– seriously
just
scary.
Just 5 or 6 weeks ago, we were talking about how there wasn't a team like that in the NFL.
That's
remember
true.
That?
5 or 6 weeks
ago, we were talking about how mediocre and how uneventful the NFL was. And now, 6 weeks later, we're looking at teams like, oh, they're just, you know, New England is playing the type of football that if you were on a football team, that's the team you want right there. You know, Philly, they can come back and play, you know, with anybody. You know, in Baltimore, they're just tough. They're just tough. You know, 6 weeks ago, we thought Pittsburgh and the Jets were the best teams in the NFL. And they still are fine football teams, but you look at how this season has evolved, and it's really exciting. You know, 6 weeks ago we were talking about how unspectacular it was.
Yeah.
Now it's getting exciting as hell.
Oh yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Speaking of which, I mean, we got one note I wrote down was about the NFL was, you know. Things have gotten a lot clearer as to who's who, but there's one team I still don't know what to think about, and that's the Bears. I mean,
I know.
Do they got some lucky charms hanging around that mug or something? Because I can't understand how every week they get to go against a second and third string quarterback. Like they got to be the luckiest team in the history of luck.
The other thing that we talked about with the Bears and how they're winning is with that crazy march. You know, they got a nice defense, and they got a wizard for an offensive coordinator. You don't know how to do, you know, you don't know how to prepare for them. You know, he just steers stuff up, and what's funny is you watch his offense, and it's like he sets up one play to set up another play, and then bang, they're scoring, And their special teams are phenomenal. Why anybody would ever kick to Devin Hester, I have no idea.
Why they ever tried to make him into a receiver, I don't understand. Just let the boy do what he do.
I would give him the ball somehow. He would, you know, if I had a talent like that, he'd be touching the ball at least every sixth time. Even if I had to call it out, even if I had to snap it to him. I want him touching the ball every sixth time. Because if there's anybody in the NFL besides Vic that makes you look like an idiot, it's Devin Hester. Because you know what he's going to do. You know? You know what he's going to do. He's just going to burn you. Everybody knows it, and all of a sudden he just takes off and runs on you. I mean,
is he the greatest kick returner ever?
Sure.
I mean, the record says it. I still put it on. There's a couple. Dion. I mean, there's a couple that you see. You go.
Yeah, I think, you know, if Dion would have had the opportunities like Hester's having, you know, if he would have had the opportunity to return as many kicks, he may have been as successful.
What's my guy? What's over in Kansas City?
Dante Hall.
Dante Hall.
Yeah.
You have some great ones.
White Shoes Johnson, you know.
Yeah.
Charles White. You know, there's been a lot. But Hester, you know, they have been kicking away from him, you know. I mean, if you saw did you see his interview after the game?
Yeah, I did see the interview.
Oh, he was, you know, I mean, this guy was crying because his coaches, you know, he was talking about, you know, all the coaches that he ever played for always told him, you know, all you ever going to be is a kick returner. And he's like, well, at least now I can say I'm the best. How's that? If all I'm going to be is a kick returner, and I'll just be the best kick returner. You're going to remember me. And now he's going, you know, now he's going to the Hall of Fame, you know. You know, so I guess, you know, that there is no shame in being nothing but a kick returner.
Not when you're that good. You still see the end zone. You get in the end zone like everybody else at 6 points, all the same.
Marcus, I was going to answer your question about the Bears. And what I would say is a lot of that skepticism is still about the quarterback. People have not quite bought into Cutler. Talented as he is, people still see problems with his mechanics and still see things that doesn't allow you to believe he's going to be consistent. Like, he's going to have a game where he's going to blow up, where he's going to fold up. It's kind of like Sanchez. I mean, some days he looks great. And even though I think he's only have 9 interceptions, people just haven't – they need to see it over a long period of time to buy in. And he's the one piece. You know, he plays well. He helps their defense. He helps a lot of things go well. But – I think people haven't bought into Cutler as much yet. And
I think that's what it is for me. Because when I look at Cutler, you know, he has games like the New England game where it looked like he folded it in. he packed it in and was like, I'm good. I don't need to deal with this today. You know, and games like that are what worry me about this team, because it's going to be close games in the playoffs, and it's going to be games where you need to come back, you know. And when you down by 20-some, three touchdowns or whatever, 20 points or whatever, you know, you got to have a Vic mentality back there. Let's make some plays. And Cutler just don't look like he had that in him, you know. At least in that Patriots game when I watched him play, it looked like he folded it up and packed it in and was good. And he had enough of the snow and the cold, and he didn't want no more what the Patriots was bringing.
Well, I think one of the things that you got to think about with this offense in Cutler is the fact that, you know, when Kurt Warner was exploiting it the way that he was, you know, he had played in it for a while. I mean, he took over for Trent Green and you know, this is a brand new offense for this young man, and he's playing it as probably as well as he could, you know, given the experience that he has with it. You have to worry about this Bears team, you know, not so much this year, but can they come back and do it again next year? And you might say, well, you know, teams will be able to prepare for it and whatnot. You know, they never prepared for it when they were running it so well down in St. Louis. I mean, once the quarterback got it really down, once the receivers were on the same page, you know, they ran their greatest show on turf for quite some time and ran the table with it. So, you know, as much as you'd like to think that the Bears don't have, you know, as much as you'd like to think you know who they are, you know, they could come back next year and retool. This is just the beginning of this offense for them. And right now, I think that their record is going to give Lovie Smith and Martz another opportunity to come back next year. Can they win it this year? You know, you don't really know. They've been beating up everybody else except for the Patriots.
And the other thing I would say is, I mean, this kid, Mason Foles, the other night, threw almost like a small window. I mean, only
right.
Foles, you know, maybe one or two other guys in a long time can make those throws. He made that one touchdown throw, like, right over the linebacker's ear, between over the window and, you know, over the hill, through the woods, your grandma's house kind of throw. I mean, he just threw that thing up in there. And I was like, man, but, you know, it's funny, and I'm going to say this. We got to have one thing, and we can't do it tonight, but we got to have a conversation about these analysts. And I ain't saying you got to be a great player to be an analyst, but Trent is – when I hear this guy talk, sometimes I feel like you might have been the worst quarterback ever. I don't know. And then Tim Hasselbeck, we got to have a conversation about these cats. How are these cats coming off? The best thing was when your boy Brooks from Tampa Bay was talking about Trey. He said, we had some guys on the defense that wanted to do something to him one time. He wasn't playing.
But I will say, the other night I did hear Jaws say something about Cutler, and then you watched it, and it was true. You know, Cutler was making some throws, you know, off his back foot, and
Jaws is usually pretty accurate.
You know, off of position.
He was a great player.
Yeah, exactly. And Jaws notices this kind of stuff, and then when he tells you about it, you start to look, and you know, he's right. And Cutler was making some throws. You know, with some different body English, and you know, wasn't truly a perfect position to throw the ball, and still making them, you know, still putting them in there, and that's what your good quarterbacks do. You can't always just like set up, you know, do that perfect 7-step drop. This is the NFL; they're chasing you around, and you're going to be throwing off a position and off your back foot and. You know, sidearm and whatnot. And so, you know, when the kid is doing that and he's completing and making those passes, you have to respect that. You know, it's just, you know, the other thing about that game last night, you know, is that field was hard as a rock.
That fire went out. Sound like crazy,
you know. You know, when ooh, kids,
man,
you guys,
I was watching on TV, like, I was, ooh, like, they like they playing on green concrete.
Right. I mean, they would fall and slide 3 or 4 feet. And,
Man, what's that? Percy Harvin. The first pass Favre completed, I don't know if you noticed it, the first pass Favre completed to Harvin, Harvin caught it in like the midfield hash. That man must have slid all the way out of bounds of like midfield, man. I swear to God.
You know, and then
I was like, yo, he's just still sliding.
That hit that Favre took, you know, when he fell on that shoulder, I thought, man, that had to hurt. But when he replayed it and I seen him hit his head, I'm like, oh, he's out. He's gone.
Yeah.
You know, you can see the birds flying around.
Yeah, he's really out.
Yeah.
Well, wow.
You know. But that's another thing we need to talk about. The more he does stuff like when he just came out and played, I'm thinking your ego is greater than anything I've ever seen. You know, that's the kind of stuff that gets you drowned or gets you run over by a truck. Or, you know, you just think you can do anything. You know, keep your ass on the sideline. So, you know, the fans. You know, they came to see me, you know, and I felt obligated to go out there and get your ass over there and sit down, you know. And don't ever come back on that field with as much stubble on your face as you had. That's disrespectful. He looked like a hobo. The more I see him, the more I start to dislike him. I love what he did up in Green Bay, but this whole charade he's been putting on for the last couple of years is over. I'm glad
of that. So speaking of Green Bay, let's get this in. We got about 3 minutes before we off air. Let's get this in real quick. Are the Packers going to make the playoffs or not? Are they going to get in? They got the Giants at home and the Bears at home. Rodgers has been cleared today. So Rodgers is going to play this weekend. Are they going to get in?
But I'm a Packer fan, and what I'm going to tell you is that as a Packer fan, they have enough talent to play in the playoffs and make it. What I also realize is that I haven't seen the Giants play two bad games in a row all year. And the Packers have put themselves in a position to get beat up.
Well, the Giants only played like a bad like quarter, actually.
Right. Well, bad 3 minutes. Yes.
They was beating ass before that last quarter.
And I think that, having to go into New York, I think they're going into New York, right? They're not playing in Green Bay. I think they're playing in New York. I don't, they have to win in New York, you know, and that's not going to be easy after what happened. As much as I don't like Coughlin, them guys are drilling this week. You know, I bet you they've had the pads on, so I bet you they never got to take the pads off Sunday. You just go home and sleep.
Practice punts all week.
Yep.
Now it's at Green Bay this week.
Oh,
these last two games are in Green Bay. Yep, both of them are in Green Bay.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So they got New York in Green Bay, and they got Chicago in Green Bay.
I think they'll beat Chicago at the end of the year, just because.
I think with the division locked up, Chicago's going to be resting guys at that point.
Right.
Chicago played the division last week. I think they're going to just say, well, we're going to get healthy and we may play a half. If y'all want it, y'all can have it, but we're not going to fight you for it.
That's also a rivalry game. If I can knock you the hell out and do it, take you back. You know, they might get that attitude.
They might, right. But I think they're going to go with don't cut off your nose and spite your face attitude.
Right. Well, it all depends if they got a chance to, you know, get any kind of a home field advantage, too. I think they would appreciate being able to play down in the Windy City. So, you know, it's one of those things. If after this week, you know, they have a chance, they'll go right after Green Bay. You know, they don't care. But, you know, and Lovie Smith realizes that after the record that he's had, if he can win one more time in Green Bay, they ain't going to have no choice but to bring his ass back next year. But
yes, we've got about a minute or so left, fellas. Parting shot. Devon.
I'm going to say this. That, don't watch the Tangerine Bowl. Don't watch any of these bowls. Don't believe in the whole craziness. I can't do it anymore. I can't handle it anymore. The bowling season is driving me crazy. I'll start watching beginning January 1st.
Ray, what you got closing out? What you going to close out with?
I can't remember who said it, but one of the greatest, one of the funniest quotes, and one of the truest quotes I heard the last couple of days, you know, is that Michael Vick's playing such good football, he got dogs rooting for him.
With that said, we out. Real sports guys. We out of here. Y'all have a good weekend. Have a good holiday. Enjoy yourselves. Be safe and enjoy your family, man. And God bless you. Take care.
God bless. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Take care.
All right, fellas, we out. We off the air. Oh, man. Dogs. You know, man, one thing I will say about Michael Vick, man, is I feel like that stint in prison he did, man, I think you talk about that maturity.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think it did more than anything was it took the game away from him.
Okay.
And I think when he was before that, I don't think he was appreciating playing football. Or at least he wasn't recognizing the love he had for the game. You know, you see that with some of these guys where they play it for so long and they've been good at it for so long that they don't love it. They don't love the study of film. They don't love the kind of the nuances and the minutia that comes with it until it's taken away from them. And I think that stint in the joint, he came out and he was like, yo, man, I love this shit. And I don't care how much film I got to watch. I'm going to watch it. You know what I'm saying? And I miss it and I love it and I'm going to get into it. And that's that maturity that you see coming out is that, you know, I think that stayed in the clink, you know, helped him figure out what he loved to do now that it was gone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one of those things that Andy Reid's been talking about, you know, that you know, he's the first one there and last one to leave, that type of thing. And did that happen, you know, has that always happened since he's been in Philly, or did that happen after Cole went down and he got that shot? Because he took advantage of that shot. And then he realized, I'm going to blow this up. This is a contract year for me. You know, you want to talk about a man that's ready to get paid. He's broke. You know, he just went through bankruptcy. You know, anybody's waiting to get a contract, it's Michael Vick. The other thing I wish we could have talked about tonight is how many teams out there, you know, are just kicking themselves in the balls. You know, if Minnesota would have went after Michael Vick 2 years ago when they had an opportunity, where would they be? If Kansas City would have went after Michael Vick 2 years ago, where would they be? Where are these teams that really, really need a quarterback right now, and they're watching this Philadelphia team just run the table on some of these squads and wondering, man, if we could have just, you know, I mean, Minnesota with Michael Vick, oh, my God. You know, they would have got a new stadium. They'd have pumped that old one up just to play, and then they'd have got a new one for next year. You know, because, I mean, you got to be sick. Everybody had a shot. Mm-hmm. Everybody had a shot to sign you. Nobody wanted to
touch. But, you know, it's
part of that judgmental stuff, you know.
Yeah, man. Part of it too is it's the NFL, and the NFL is a business more than anything, and they gotta, you know, that was a hard business decision to make for people at that time.
But right now, you got to be happy for him. Right now, you got to be happy as hell for him. It's his contract year. He's having a blow up year. So
we got to give credit. And credit's got to get back to the reason why he could do is that Donovan endorsed it. Donovan helped transition. Donovan was
That's another thing we didn't touch on, you know. That whole embarrassing situation in Washington.
We got to talk about that. I know this is after
our
whole embarrassing situation. He's the
guy. This is a future Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
True enough that Donovan.
They bitched for good years left. Rex Grossman?
But it's like Keyshawn said. Let's say it real. Shanahan hasn't won anything since he had Terrell Davis and Elway.
Right.
And without those two Super Bowl victories, you Josh McDaniels. So how are you acting this crazy, you know, you and your son doing all that? I mean, Keyshawn said it well the other day, and I respect that to the hilt, because nothing about this situation make sense. And even the players in the locker room got to be looking at it like, this ain't even, this is right. And this is where you talk about when people get into that whole mentality, you would never treat, look how they treat Brett Favre. Now, Donovan got more to play in the game than Brett does. And Brett, they let Brett come back on a broken leg, on a hurt shoulder, and let him decide to play the day of the game.
But look at everything that's transpired with Washington this year.
Yep.
Ainsworth blew up.
Yep.
Larry Johnson isn't even in the NFL anymore. Clinton Portis got hurt. And Donovan McNabb is benched. You know, is this why they brought Shanahan in? Is this what they're looking
right.
for?
Right.
You
they
know,
said, they said Snyder not happy. They said Snyder isn't happy.
No. With Shanahan or with the organization?
With Shanahan, because he wanted this to work out. So
he sure,
said they just gave McNabb an extension.
But they also gave themselves an out clause.
That's right.
They also gave themselves an out clause. There's no way that Donovan's coming back next year if Shanahan's here. Shanahan, he can't afford to have Donovan McNabb come back. And he ain't wishing him well either.
And he has up until September to pay that $10 million thing. So they could probably hold Donovan, depending on how they treat Donovan. If they just let Donovan go and trade him, that's cool. But if they hold him until September just in spite, then that's when
it won't be in spite. It depends on what they can do in the offseason and the draft.
Well, it depends on the labor deal too.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I mean, hell, if they don't get a deal done by the middle of August, they got 2 weeks to get going. They're gonna need somebody to know the system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you ain't got a lot of time to prepare. You know, you ain't gonna bring in nobody new.
They can hold Donovan until September, and he won't be able to sign on with a team and get going either. Shanahan's not going to come out looking like a fool with this. He doesn't have to do anything until September. So depending on what they can do in the off season, but I don't. His days in Washington are over. You know, as much as he said today, you know, he doesn't think his relationship with Shanahan is damaged beyond repair. He did say that he was embarrassed by the benching. He did say that it could have happened a little bit better. Although, you know, he tried to be politically correct about it, but he at home with his wife, he's saying this motherfucker trying to hurt my reputation.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, he's saying all the right things, and Donovan will, you know, hopefully land on his feet somewhere. You know,
he need to pull a page from Favre's book and just start talking Jones. You know.
Oh, yeah.
And he
lose his mind.
You know, lose his mind. You know. I ain't really got to get along with the coach anyway. You know, pull some Favre type.
And he might as well, because he's played it nice his whole career, and he ain't got him no respect. He might as well just snap.
He should just snap.
But listen, though, you got to think, you know, if he can get traded, he'll get that $10 million. If he can get kept, you know, if he can stay there, he'll get the $10 million. There's not a team in the NFL that are going to go after him right now, given the fact that, you know, it would look as though Washington is going to let him go.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it'll be one of those. He'll look desperate. But you know, Donovan up in Minnesota is a great fit. Donovan down in Kansas City is a great fit. Donovan McNabb is still a great quarterback. He's still
Absolutely.
Better than the quarterback that they have in Minnesota. He's still better than the quarterback that they have in Kansas City. He's still better than the quarterback. You know, Donovan McNabb in Tennessee would have been a great fit this year, given the fact that Vince Young went down.
Yeah.
You know, Donovan McNabb is still a viable player. And they're saying, you know, how smart Andy Reid looks, you know, trading him within the division. He went to a bad situation with Shanahan. I point at Shanahan more than I point at Donovan McNabb.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
And that's the way they're making this out to be, as though it's Donovan's fault that all of these things happen. Donovan didn't learn the offense. Donovan doesn't have the stamina. But, I mean, if you look at the situation with Haynesworth, if you look at the situation with with Larry Johnson. I mean, if you, I mean, if, I mean, Shanahan came in there, and he's wreaked havoc. And the beauty of it is he's got two championships. He could walk away at the end of the year. He could retire and say, I just can't handle it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But his son might not ever work again. You know, he messes shit up.
Yeah. Well, hey, folks, I got to get going.
Okay.
I got to get going. Y'all have a good Christmas, man. Y'all enjoy yourselves.
You too.
That's yeah, right. Man, y'all take care.
All right, take care.
All right, man, peace.
Do you take care?
All right.